You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Richard Boxall.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Dustin Johnson claims his first major title with a three-shot victory at the 116th US Open.
Couldn't be more excited and more happy and you know, more proud of myself, you know, especially with the things that happened last year at the US Open on the 18th hole, you know, to come back this year and to get it done, you know, definitely bittersweet.
And we'll hear more from the American in a few minutes' time. Ireland's Shane Lowry led by four heading into the final round, but his chances of landing a first major disappeared with a six-over par 76.
It's only a mistake if you don't learn from it, so I'm sure I learned a lot from today. I don't know what it is yet, but when I'm in that position again, and I know I will be, I'll handle it probably a little bit better.
So stay with us as we review all of the action from Oakmont Country Club and preview the next event on the European Tour, the BMW International Open. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm pleased to say I'm joined by Richard Boxall. Richard, how are you?
It's been a very long journey to get in here, I have to say, Dan. It was, from when I left home, it took me 2 hours to get here on a journey that normally takes me 40 minutes.
Traffic trouble.
Major issues. Traffic trouble and raining. You know what the English are like when it starts raining? They just, everything comes to a standstill.
We had weather issues, of course, at the US Open. It was something of a delayed finish to the first, second and third rounds, but we got there in the end.
Yeah.
And speaking of getting there in the end, Dustin Johnson, a first major title. He finished 4 under after closing with a 69. Fully deserved for some fantastic play over the 4 days.
He did, yeah. His short game, his driving, everything was absolutely spot on. I was a bit surprised, I have to say, with Shane Lowry when he went in with a four-shot lead into the final round. And I didn't have him down for anything like a 76. I mean, do you know what odds he was not to win that? What would you reckon? Yeah, I know you're quite good.
Shane Lowry?
Yeah, not to win it.
Not to win. Well, he was around about even money to win the event heading into the final round.
Yeah.
So therefore, he would have been even money not to win.
You are absolutely spot on. I was quite surprised at that. I didn't think he'd be that. I thought he'd be, you know, be something like 3-1 or 4-1 not to win it.
We'll talk about the ruling that occurred regarding Dustin Johnson in greater detail a little bit later on. But just how difficult would it have been for DJ to play under that sort of pressure during the vast majority of the back nine?
I think it would have been, you know, being a pro myself, there is nothing worse than somebody says, oh, you might have a penalty at the end of the round. Because then not only does it affect him, it affects all the other players that are around as well. They don't know, is he 5 under, is he 3 under, is he 4 under? You know, what score is he actually on here? Do I lay up? Do I go for it? Do I have a go at this putt? Do I not have a go at it? In fact, if I'd have been Dustin Johnson, I'd have said when they came out to me on the 12th, I said, well, I really don't want to hit another shot until we get this cleared up.
We will get to the whys and wherefores of that particular ruling a little bit later on. I'm pleased to say right now, though, that joining us on the Race to Dubai show from the States is top US golf broadcaster Matt Adams. Matt, a very good day to you. First of all, DJ's success, much deserved, given what happened at Chambers Bay last year and indeed Whistling Straits for different circumstances a few years previous. He fully deserves his major win.
Yeah, good day to you, gents, as well. It is funny how the game seems to circle back around in that way. It always seems to write its own story. And, you know, this was one I can't think of a time. Richard, maybe you can. I can't think of a time when a player has broken through, maybe Phil at the Masters the first time, when so many people seem to be waiting for, be expecting a breakthrough at a major championship level, and then it gets delivered. And I think most people will agree that the person that deserved to win this U.S. Open was the person that ended up hoisting the trophy.
The only one I can think of it being expecting to win would probably be Jason Day, I would have thought. You know, they was expecting him to win, mate. Yeah, I would think he's the only one that you can sort of think of like that. I was also disappointed a little bit for Lee Westwood. I thought he was going to do a little bit better. I thought this might actually be his time. Did you not?
Yeah, I thought so too. And funny, I did an interview earlier on this day with a national radio broadcaster here in North America, and they're asking me about Shane Lowry. And my comment to which I ultimately was very wrong about was I said, I don't expect Shane to back up. If they're going to beat Shane, they're going to have to go after him. So I was surprised about that, too, because I thought Shane was in very good form. So I thought both Lee Westwood and Shane Lowry would be forces to reckon with. I just didn't realize that Dustin Johnson would channel a Dustin Johnson that he hadn't really shown us in the final round before, one that didn't make that critical error, because in his other opportunities to win, he always seemed to do something to self-destruct himself, but he didn't do it. And that was the difference. And so, yeah, I was very surprised by Lee. I think Lee deserves credit that he's been with both major champions in 2016 in the final round. It shows that he's still in the mix. But I was surprised by Shane, and I'm hoping that he learns from it.
Just picking up on the disappointment of Shane Lowry, talk us through the final day, chaps, because, of course, we started with the third round yet to be completed. And if you think with Shane Lowry having slept from Saturday into Sunday, he's got to go back onto the course. Maybe that's when he would back up. But he didn't back up then. He didn't back off. He made a couple of birdies and he was overwhelming favourite, Boxy, to win going into the fourth and final round after he completed 54 holes.
Yeah, and as I said, you know, as Matt was just saying there, it was a surprise. I mean, who would have thought that Lee Westwood and Shane Lowry combined would have been 16 over par for the final round? I never saw that coming. Okay, admittedly, it was one of those days for Westwood, shot 80. But I never had Lowry down for a 76. I just didn't have it. I just didn't see it. But he also, you know, when that ruling came up, that's when he started dropping a few shots as well, because, you know, you just don't know where you stand.
But even before that, Matt, Shane Lowry looked a little bit nervous during his final round. He bogeyed two of his first five holes, and Dustin Johnson was putting pressure on early on. You could see that turnaround even before we got into the ruling.
Yeah, the funny thing is about bogeys, particularly in the US Open, but I think it probably holds for any major championship, is that they happen so very, very easily that normally a bogey is such a mark, it's such a sin for a professional golfer that it's looked upon as carrying with it all types of emotional bearing and more. In this case, they sneak up so carefully. I actually didn't think that he gave anything away with those. I mean, we heard it time and again, particularly at Oakmont this week, that you could hit five good shots and walk away with a bogey on a hole. And so I didn't feel a sense of panic on his behalf early in the round when that was happening. I just thought it was kind of the flow and ebb of the early part of the round. And, you know, he got himself caught on the wrong side here and there. It was at the end of the round that Richard was just talking about where I think he really lost his focus. And I think that the ruling probably had bearing on it, but I think it was, in my view, it was probably more the weight of the entire week, the weight of very long days, in that it overcame him emotionally from an exhaustion standpoint, from just his concentration had reached its pinnacle and he could go no further. And so that was the part that surprised me from that standpoint. I don't know whether surprise is the correct word to use for lack of a better, that I thought that he'd be able to hold it together through that, but he was not. And so, you know, everybody that has spoken to Shane Lowry in this regard, and Andrew Landry, for that matter, have said these are two young players. They're going to learn from the experience that they had, and it will benefit them down the road.
Well, DJ certainly put it to bed late on with some terrific play down the stretch, and we can now hear from the man of the moment.
You know, it's definitely a big monkey off my back, you know, coming into today. You know, I've been in this situation time and time again, so, you know, I know what to expect. You know, I know how to handle myself. And, you know, for me to finally get it done on Sunday in a major, it's a huge monkey off my back. I don't know. It's fantastic. And it feels really good for sure, because, you know, I've worked so hard to get here. You know, I've put myself in this position many times. And, you know, to get it done is definitely sweet.
So that was a relieved Dustin Johnson, winner of the 116th US Open, but it wasn't without drama and indeed controversy. Let's just remind you what happened. Standing over his ball on the fifth green, Johnson made two practice putts as he prepared to address the ball to take his putt. It moved slightly. Johnson stepped away, claiming he'd not addressed the ball. He checked with the rules official, who was happy there'd been no infringement, with playing partner Lee Westwood also absolving him of blame. But another rules official approached Johnson on the 12th tee and, after a discussion, decided they needed to review the footage of the incident after he completed his round because he could face a one-stroke penalty. The penalty stroke was eventually upheld and Johnson signed for a one under par 69. Here's how Johnson saw the incident.
Well, on the fifth green, the rules official, I called him over and, you know, told him what happened. And, you know, Lee was standing right there. He, you know, he saw it. So, and, you know, we both agreed that I didn't cause the ball to move. So, you know, I just played on from there with no penalty. Still watching the video, I still don't think I caused the ball to move. But the USGA, they said I did. So, or with the rule that, you know, I don't even understand the rule, but I got a penalty. It didn't matter at the end of the day, and that's it.
Do you think that they were trying to do the right thing, Matt, and as you say, just got caught up with themselves almost and didn't realise the bigger picture, but their intention was perhaps right?
I absolutely think that was the case, and that's another message that's getting lost in the fervor that's erupting after this, that I do believe that everyone that was involved thought they were protecting the field in making the decision that they made. They just lost perspective along the way. But yes, I do think that their heart was in the right place. It was their mind that wasn't.
Matt, the amount of pressure, not just winning a major for the first time, but given what he's done in previous majors and the pressure that's been applied to him and this on top of it, I mean, it was a superhuman effort, wasn't it, from Johnson to win?
Yeah, but it's a reflection of his superhuman skills in that one of the players that said he would not have carried on without having a definitive answer was Rory McIlroy that tweeted that out initially. But the thing that is both the strength and the weakness of Dustin Johnson is that he does not burden himself with deep thought. He just flushes them out of his mind. He claims that even on 18, after he hit that approach shot, that he didn't know where he stood. He turned to his brother, his caddy, Austin, and asked, how are we doing? Where do we stand? What do we need to do? And at that point, obviously, the shot of glory had already secured it. So that's just not his nature. So if you had to pick a player in that situation to say, hey, you may or may not have a one-stroke penalty at the conclusion of this round, we'll let you know after the final round of the U.S. Open, which you happen to be in contention for at the moment, you couldn't pick a better player than Dustin Johnson, who has this ability to just categorize it and say, all right, I'll deal with that later on. I'm not worried about it right now. The only thing I'm worried about now is the shot that's before me. Now, having said that, that same mindset, that disconnect, if you will, to what's going on in the here and now has hurt him in the past as well in terms of loss of focus, you know, at Royal St. George's where he hit that 14 out of bounds inexplicably. And you went, where did that come from? That he has that ability to kind of tune in and tune out at times. And in this case, the ability to tune out the noise helped him.
Well, for Dustin Johnson, it was a first major championship in his 29th appearance. His four-shot final round winning comeback is the largest in a major championship since Phil Mickelson made up five to win the 2013 Open Championship. And, of course, it ends his run of near misses in major championships. Prior to this triumph, he'd been placed in the top 10 on 11 occasions during his career in majors. Well, let's reflect on the rest of the leaderboard. First of all, hearing from Shane Lowry, who finished tied second. The Irishman let slip a four-shot lead on the final day. So what went wrong?
I wasn't hitting great shots. I wasn't hitting bad shots. Kept hitting at the 25, 30, 35 feet. On these greens, just tricky two-putts. Kept leaving myself a lot of work to do and, you know, caught up with me on 14. Really bad three-putt there. And then obviously three-putt 15 and 16 as well. And you know, to do that at that time in this tournament is, I mean, the more I think about it, the more upset I get. So, listen, that's the way golf is. I just have to get on with it.
He was so disappointed at the end of the tournament, wasn't he, Boxing?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I don't blame him either. I mean, all the excitement for the whole week building up. You know, you got five holes left to play and you go three-whack, three-whack, three-whack. I mean, it's, like you said, you know, the more he thinks about it, the more disappointed he is. But, you know, he's a pretty fine player, it has to be said, Shane Lowry. And I think I'd have him down as a major win. I'd have him down as an Open Championship. Maybe not this year, but that sort of thing.
Matt, would you go along with that?
Yeah, I would. What impressed me about Shane Lowry is his ability to play on different types of golf courses, which only supports Boxy's contention that he can win an Open Championship, because obviously that couldn't be more different a style of golf than what we saw this past week at Oakmont. But when he won the World Golf Championships Bridgestone Invitational, that was on the South Course at Firestone, which is a very lush golf course, similar in terms of the grasses that he was playing on and how thick the rough is. Not quite as thick or not quite as fast on the greens, but there's more similarity there than you would see, for example, on an Open Championship road course. So, yeah, I think he showed himself to be a world-class player.
Well, Sergio Garcia once again threatened at a major. The Spaniard was 3 under par at one stage on Sunday, but 3 successive bogeys ended his challenge, and he finished level par.
Unfortunately, one mental error for me on 14, knowing how fast that putt really is, and got too greedy, and I was just coming off a birdie, and I was thinking, let's make another one, and let's keep going, and unfortunately made that bogey, and kind of stopped me a little bit, and then a couple bad breaks, I guess, coming in, but, it is what it is. You know, it's been a while since I've been in a major 4 rounds up there, in contention, so it was great. It was a great experience. Obviously, there's a lot of nerves, and but I really enjoyed it. I think that I handled it quite well, unfortunately, came up a little bit short, but, I'm still happy with the week.
One that slipped away for Sergio, we've got to mention Lee Westwood as well, who recorded a final round 10 over 80 to finish at 8 over. Boxy's time running out for Messrs Westwood and Garcia?
You'd have to say, yes, time is certainly. Lee's now, 43, is he? Maybe getting on for 44. Sergio Garcia, again, it just goes to show, what majors mean to these players, because, Westwood has won so many tournaments around the world. I mean, it's remarkable. I think he's won 23 or 24 on the European Tour alone. Garcia's won many. So it's not like they don't know how to win. As I said earlier, you only get 4 chances a year, but there's a lot of pressure. It shows what pressure can do. In effect, there is no such thing as stress and pressure. It's only brought on by yourself. You know what I mean? If they've won all those tournaments, why can't they win a major? Sometimes it's around golf courses that they've even played majors on, if you know what I mean, and they've won the other events on a European tour. So it just goes to show, it really does go to show. Honestly, I'm never a major winner, obviously, apart from the 5th major, the Italian Open. But, I've played in Opens and they are different. I've played in 14 of them and they are massively different. And it just goes to show how human Garcia and Westwood are, because they've only got the 4 chances a year, and that puts a lot of pressure mentally on them.
Matt, we always want Westwood and Garcia to do well in majors, obviously, from a European perspective. You talked about Dustin Johnson and the fact that he doesn't let thoughts get in the way of his game, if you like. He doesn't really feel the pressure because that's the type of character that he is. Does the reverse apply, do you think, when it comes to Garcia and Westwood? Do they think about things too much? Have it been talked so much about those two particular players that it gets in their head and for whatever reason, they just can't get the job done?
Yeah, obviously, I think what's happening with both of those players is that, you relive your sins. One time, Gary Player told me this quote. He said, you relive your sins over a 3-foot putt in a major championship. And that couldn't be more true with those two guys. You can see all the scar tissue that must be just coursing through their veins at that point as they're trying to make these putts that mean so very much. I thought it was interesting in the sound clip that you just played that Sergio basically wrapped it up by saying he's pleased with his performance for the week. And I think ultimately that's Sergio's default, to say, well, I'm pleased with what I did. I was in the mix again. But, where do you go from here with Sergio and with Lee Westwood? Because we saw that the same thing from Lee in 2013 at Muirfield. It looked like he had it in hand. It looked like he had the ability to take a run. It looked like this might be the one where he gets it done. And if there's somewhere there's a neuron in there that's just not firing at that final moment. My thought was, some extent with Sergio, but I didn't have the same confidence with Sergio as I had with Lee for some reason, that because he was behind, that his chances would be better. Instead of being out in front and all the pressure that would go with that, that he'd be able to charge from behind. And if he shot a 68 or a 67, he would walk his way into his first major championship. But even that didn't work. So you know, I don't have any great hope at this point that their fortunes are going to change. I just think that when the pressure reaches its absolute pinnacle, that there is a default there that causes them to be unable to perform. It's not something unique in the history of the game, and I think we've seen it displayed once again.
I reckon, Matt, you know, if Lee Westwood or Garcia win a major, their speech would be virtually the same as Dustin Johnson's. In other words, they would turn around and say, I'm glad I've got that monkey off my back. And you think Dustin Johnson hasn't been going anywhere near as long as those two.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't think it's a monkey when we're talking about those two. It's an 800-pound gorilla that's hanging on their back. And I think it's weighed them down.
I think you're right, Matt.
Matt, many thanks for joining us on the Race to Dubai show. Have a great remainder of the week. And, of course, we will see you at the Open.
Thank you, gentlemen. Looking forward to it.
Many thanks to Matt Adams and his thoughts on the US Open and Dustin Johnson's success. So, Richard, let's get the confirmed top 10 from the US Open.
OK, in a tie for eighth, it was Daniel Summerhayes, Zach Johnson, Jason Duffner and Jason Day. Seventh spot was Kevin Na. Tied fifth was Sergio Garcia and Brandon Grace. And in a tie for second were Jim Furyk with a 66 in his final round. Shane Lowry, 10 shots worse, I'm afraid, 76. And Scott Piercy, and the winner finally. And very well done, I would say, too, to Dustin Johnson.
The tips from last week.
Yes.
I went for Russell Knox, who was tied for 23rd, alongside Jordan Spieth, who was tied for 37th. Boxer, you went for Paul Casey, who didn't play the weekend. Jason Day was your other selection, did very well, was 8th. But Bob Bubka went for Rory McIlroy, who missed the cut, as we know, but also Dustin Johnson. He's managed to find a winner for us.
He has. Has he done that in the past?
I'm not quite so sure. That might be his first winner on the show.
Well done to Bob.
Indeed.
He does like Dustin Johnson, though.
In the Fantasy Race to Dubai game, Paul Bridden won the most points last week. His team, Elbow Fish, was captained by Shane Lowry, who won 2.8 million points. Meanwhile, Martin Rotera maintains his slender lead at the top of the overall leaderboard. Keep an eye on the European Tour website this week for their Fantasy 3 to watch at the BMW International Open. To pick your fantasy team, just go to europeantour.com/myeuropeantour. Richard, can we have the latest top 10 when it comes to the Race to Dubai standings?
We can. Would you like it in reverse order, or would you like it from 1 to 10?
Reverse order.
Reverse order. OK, in 10th spot is Joost Luiten. Shane Lowry's 9th. 8th is Lee Westwood. Henrik Stenson is 7th. Brandon Grace is 6th. The BMW PGA champion from May, Chris Wood, is 5th. 4th is Rafa Cabrera-Bello, who's having an excellent season, it must be said. Louis Oosthuizen is 3rd. Rory McIlroy is 2nd. And Danny Willett is still leading the way, and comfortably so.
Moving on to the Ryder Cup points table.
OK, the Ryder Cup standings, how it is at the moment, there is 4 from the European points list, and those 4 are Danny Willett, Rory McIlroy, Chris Wood and young Matthew Fitzpatrick. And then there are 5 picked from the world points list that aren't already in on that European points list. And that's Henrik Stenson, Sergio Garcia, Justin Rose, Rafa Cabrera-Bello and Andy Sullivan. So team looking good. Remember, there's 3 captains' picks on top of that.
Shane Lowry, great performance at the US Open, but just off the bottom of both points lists at the moment. Would you put him in as a wild card if you were picking a team right now?
I think you'd have to right now, yes. Even though, okay, he had a bit of a blip yesterday, but most definitely. I think he'll make his way in anyway, don't you?
I would have thought so.
Yes, I would have thought so.
In other news, Portugal's José Felipe Lima has claimed his 4th win on the European Challenge Tour with a 2-shot victory at the Nageti Open in France. And in the women's game, South Korea's Se-Yung Kim won the Maya Classic in Grand Rapids, Michigan to secure her 2nd LPGA title of the year. That brings us on to the world rankings. We need the top 10 after the 2nd major of the season.
OK, in 10th spot is Justin Rose. Danny Willett is 9th. Adam Scott, 8th. 7th is Henrik Stenson. 6th, Ricky Fowler. Bubba Watson is 5th. Rory McIlroy is 4th. Dustin Johnson is up to 3rd. Jordan Spieth is 2nd. And Jason Day is still ahead of the points list.
Let's move on to the European Tour event this week, which is the BMW International Open at Golf Club Gut Lachenhof in Pulheim near Cologne in Germany, where you're on your way to a little bit later on this week.
I am going there tomorrow afternoon. Yes, I've been to the course a few times. It's got two... The finish to both nines is very good. The 18th is a very tough par four around a lake that runs down the left-hand side, and then over the other side of the lake is the ninth, where the water runs down the right-hand side. And the hazard has been used by many a golf ball, or many a golf ball has been received in those hazards, including my own, I have to say, a while ago. But it's a good course, and it needs a little bit of breeze, to be honest, but its fairways are pretty generous fairways, wide fairways, but needs a bit of breeze around there.
Pablo Larrazabal is the defending champion, but he won on a different course 12 months ago. So who's playing this week and who should we be focusing on in terms of a winner? Tell us one or two of the star names in action, first of all.
Well, you've got Henrik Stenson is playing, Wai Yang's playing, Danny Willett, the Masters champion. Bernd Wiesberger is playing, and nice to have another look at somebody like Andy Sullivan back from the US Open. To Bjorn Olesen, who else have we got? Tongchai Jaidee's playing. He's been a bit quiet of late, actually, Jaidee. Young James Morrison, and as you said, the defending champion, Pablo Larrazabal. Kiradesh Appy-Barnrat. So it's a fairly good field, and you want me to pick a winner,
well,
don't
I'd
you?
Like to. I mean, would you avoid anyone who played at the US Open who was beaten up by Oakmont, or would you not see it as an issue?
No, I would think somebody like Andy Sullivan will come back and go, how easy is this course? You know, anyone who's played 4 rounds, even if they've missed the cut and they're playing, they will go, this course will seem so easy. I mean, you know, in the US Open, you're walking single file, you know, to get down the fairway, where here, you could get a couple of football teams across the fairways here. So it will seem so easy.
OK, then we need a winner. Who do you fancy this week, Boxy?
I'll tell you who I'm going to go for, because he played well last week. He finished fifth in the US Open. I'm going to go for Sergio Garcia.
Garcia for you. I'm going to go for Yoslat, and I think it's a big plus if you didn't play in the US Open.
Is that because purely of the jet lag?
Not because of the jet lag. I think it's the mental strain that a US Open can put on you. It doesn't matter where you finish, you know, you're still going to have the stresses and strains of playing shots that you think are good that end up being disastrous. So the fact that Lauton missed out last week, I'm putting that down as a plus, but he obviously takes on a very good field, and I've got a lot of respect for your selection, Boxing. That is all for now. Next week, we'll review the BMW International Open and look ahead to the 100th edition of the Open de France. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news from the European Tour via Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. But for now, from Richard Boxall,
goodbye.
And myself, Dan Roebuck, it's goodbye. We'll see you next time.